Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleinkofer. Civil Defense Radio is more than just a podcast about a new American civil defense structure. Through our total media presence, our website, Facebook, and Twitter pages, we work to inform you of the many serious threats, both natural and man-made, that our nation faces. Those issues many news outlets are afraid to speak about or unwilling to mention. We believe this total information approach will assist you in making the best possible decisions about your safety and security for yourself, your family, your neighborhood, and community during disastrous events. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and we want to be part of your preparation. We strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. We offer guidance on our website at civildefenseradio.com under the Resources tab. Look for the guide at the top of the page. It is enough information to get the discussion started. And as always, we are here to help. We ask that you regularly download and listen to our shows and visit our web and social media platforms often at civildefenseradio.com, on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. Now, let's get on with our show. This week, we have Nyla Rhodes, a.k.a. Mil-Spec Mom. Hello, Nyla.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. I really don't even remember how I came across your blog, but when I did, I thought, man, she'd be a great guest. She's got a lot of cool stuff here, a lot of interesting blog posts, and you even have a couple of videos out there on YouTube, don't you?
Yeah, they're embedded in my blogs now. Okay. But yeah, I've got several vlogs, as the new hip kids say these days, on my blog as well.
Yeah, you have an interesting history and bio. So, if you could, can you introduce yourself to the audience and let them know who you are and what makes you tick?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you guys already caught, my name is Nyla Rhodes. I started Mil-Spec Mom back in 2014. And it's been such an interesting journey kind of figuring out where exactly I wanted this blog to go and kind of my reasoning behind it. Because I think all bloggers start out with just an outlet to kind of be creative in a way. And my husband is in the National Guard, and he has been for almost 20 years now, and he's had several deployments under his belt. And so we've dealt a lot with, you know, the separation, and we've dealt a lot with him being a contractor. So he was gone, you know, even more. And so we got to a point in our marriage where I started realizing, probably much later than I should have, that when he's overseas and when he's gone, or TDY, that the responsibility of the safety and protection of our family falls on me. And that's my job. And it took me a little even longer even to kind of make that connection between, even when he's at work in his 8-to-5 Monday through Friday job, and I'm here at the house with the kids, that responsibility of protection and security of my family falls on me, because he can't be here. He has to work. And so that was kind of a sobering realization, and which led me to my blog. It's like, I need to find someone who can teach me how to be my own you know, security detail, how to be my kids' security detail, how to have that mindset of self-defense where I'm looking around and having that good situational awareness, but not get to the point where I lose who I am as a female and where I lose who I am as a mother, because those are still obviously important to me as well. And be able to mix the motherhood aspect with the safety aspect, because there's something that you call urban camouflage. Okay. And being a female and being a mother with kids in tow is one of the best pieces of urban camouflage you can have. And we can utilize this to our advantage if we have proper training. And so I started researching some instructors in my local area, trying to find someone who could teach me how to be a mom with a firearm and kids at the same time. How do I draw if I've got my infant or my toddler on my hip? You know, what do I do if I have a cart full of groceries and someone comes and asks me for my purse, you know? And I couldn't find anybody that could teach me that. You know, they're all about teaching me how to do, you know, like Hondo rolls and like all these transitions between my carbine and my handgun, which is awesome and so much fun, but not relevant to the information that I was wanting in that moment, which is how do I go get gas? How do I go to the library? How do I take my kids to the park and keep them safe? And so my blog started out as a journey of the information I was finding because essentially I became the firearms instructor that I wish I would have had years ago.
That's cool.
So it really has been an amazing process to kind of, this sounds weird, watch myself grow as a firearms instructor to take classes with law enforcement and with military, with private contractors, pretty much anyone who will let me take their class as a civilian and utilize that information and translate it into how can I use this as a mother on a day-to-day life, going to the park, doing the mom thing, doing the laundry, you know, going to the grocery store, hitting up Walmart. How can I utilize that information? And so a lot of the content on my blog speaks to that, but it mostly speaks to having that proper mindset. And so that's been a lot of my background is getting women to understand that, you know, while carrying a gun is always going to be my first choice, if you just have that good head on your shoulders and you're looking around and you're aware of your situation, that can mitigate 90% of threats out there.
Oh
So.
yeah, that's important, situational awareness. I was walking out of the store with my wife a few days ago, and she was focused on putting stuff in her purse and not looking around. And that's when you should be looking outside before you even step out the door of the store, because if somebody's going to get you, they're going to get you right there between there and the car. And you shouldn't be fumbling with your purse and things like that, and bags, and not know what's going on ahead of you.
Yeah, exactly. And it is difficult. And that's one thing that I always try to tell our students is that the first couple of weeks that you're really trying to be turned on all the time with situational awareness, it's exhausting. It is mentally and emotionally exhausting because you're kind of living in that world of scared chihuahua for a few days until you kind of get that, you know, there's not always a bad guy around every corner, but you still need to be watchful just in case.
Exactly.
So, and I know that a lot of women are guilty of this, as is myself, is that when I'm out in public with my husband, I notice that I'm not always out of 10. And it's something that, you know, even after having doing this for so long, am aware of and, you know, trying to fix that is that, you know, I know he's watching, so why do I need to? You know, and so a lot of us get stuck in that mindset of like our husbands are our protectors, you know, they're our protector providers and we trust them implicitly. But a second set of eyes is always necessary and always needed. And so falling into that, oh, my husband's got it, I'm good, you know, mindset can be just as dangerous because now you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem and you're acting as a liability instead of an asset.
Yeah, well, it works as a team. You work as a
Exactly.
team, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to get into your training with a handgun, a lot of women like leather and lace, but you like kydex.
I do. This is kind of my soapbox here, so bear with me for just a minute. I am very persnickety on what firearms companies market to women because I think most of them are ridiculous. So as I'm teaching and as, you know, during my background when I'm, you know, trying to get spun up because my husband was a federal firearms instructor for many, many years with the Department of State. And so I had to go elsewhere to get my firearms instruction because there's something about learning from a spouse that just does not happen for a long time.
I know.
You
I've
know,
tried teaching my
once you
wife,
share
it's
a
hard.
bathroom with somebody, you cannot take instruction like that at the range seriously. You just can't. And so I had to spend thousands of dollars on other companies without my husband there to get to the point where we could have a conversation and be on the same level and for me to understand what he was saying and for us to get far enough in our marriage for me to understand that he was saying it out of love and respect, not out of criticism, because he wants me to have these skills. But it takes time. So women, if you have your husbands out there that are trying to show you things, you know, you might just say, hey, I can't learn from you. Let's spend the money and let me just go to a class by myself because you're going to learn so much more. But one thing that I have learned in my journey of, you know, carrying on a daily basis and security and self-defense and even just being an instructor is that there are so many companies out there that market pink items to women and subpar equipment in hopes that they'll buy it. and with that equipment having no basis on the safety and security of that person. You know, and it really does a disservice to women out there thinking, oh, well, here, you need this pink lacy thing to carry because you're a girl, rather than just using what the professionals use. Okay, so what I always tell our clients and in my blog 1,000 times, if it's good enough for law enforcement, if it's good enough for the military, and if it's good enough for private contractors to use, why can't women use it too? There's no reason that we need to be marketed to inferior pink equipment that is dangerous, because it really is, on some level, it's just dangerous. You know, most of the trying to articulate this in a very politically correct way, I apologize. There's a lot of other carry methods out there, and there's thousands beyond thousands of different carry methods out there. But when you look at the professionals who use Kydex holsters on the waistband, you know, that's what the majority of them use. And so products like that have been tested in blood with the lives of service members and law enforcement. There's no reason that we need to try to reinvent the wheel on something that's already been done and tested. You know, I don't feel comfortable carrying a piece of, you know, like, you know, the leather and lace, or some of the corset holsters, or the belly bands, or the thigh holsters, or like the bra, you know, pocket holsters, because they're just not safe. They're not as safe. You know, I try to look at equipment on a good, better, best scenario. You know, best being Kydex on the waistband, either in the waistband or out of the waistband, but just utilizing what the professionals use. And this is kind of the whole mindset behind my blog post, The Women Can Be Operators Too, because there's no reason that me as a mom needs to use anything different than what my local law enforcement uses. You know, it all takes training. And so there's a lot of those subpar pieces of equipment out there that don't have good trigger guards, that have really funky retention straps, that they market it, oh, you carry this and you'll be fine, but they don't promote the proper training to utilize their product. And I think that's kind of my biggest issue. I wrote an article for Recoil Off Grid about 2 years ago with kind of that same concept in it. And one of the headlines that they put on that portion of my article was, don't pink it and shrink it. It drives me bonkers. People are marketing unsafe products to women just to get their money and not to make sure that they're safe in doing so.
Yeah, that's an important aspect too. It sure is. Safe handling, safe usage, marksmanship, and safe carry. I mean, it all goes together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you brought up your article about moms can be operators too. So I really like that article. I think it touches on a number of points that our audience would be interested in knowing. Can you go over that a little bit and let us know what brought you to that idea of being operator quality?
Yeah. So this is something that my husband and I had talked about for a very long time before this blog came to fruition. And it's something that's always been important to me, because if I'm going to sink my time and money into something, I want to do it 100%. You know, I'm a mother. I am also a full-time grad student right now. I'm working on my capstone or my thesis for a dual master's degree in Homeland Security Emergency and Disaster Management. And I've got 3 kids that are 9, 3, and 1. And so my time and my money are tied up in a lot of other things right now. And so if I'm going to spend the time and spend the money on something, I'm going to make sure I get my money's worth out of it. And I'm going to give it everything I have, because that information is important to me. And so I think there's a lot of women out there who think, oh, I'm just female. I'm not military. I'm not law enforcement. Therefore, I can never be at this higher standard. And I think that's a joke. I think it's totally false. And I understand that mindset, you know, being a mother and not military and not law enforcement. It took me a long time to realize that just because I'm not those things has no bearing on my skills whatsoever. You know, there have been plenty of times where I've outshot military and law enforcement during a class, you know, during one of the drills. And that's just, you know, I don't have any bad habits necessarily. And so we always say in our classes that women are easier to teach than men. And often by the end of the class, women will end up shooting better than men, because men, they have to reprogram from either their time in the military or their time, you know, in law enforcement. They just do something, you know, they have that funky habit they've had since they were 15, you know, but women don't. We don't have those bad habits to reprogram. And so we really have a much better slate to be able to put information on and utilize it later. So part of the concept for this blog was understanding that, no, I'm not law enforcement. No, I'm not military, but I've got a hunger to learn, and that can make me just as good as everybody else. And so it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing for a while when people asked me, you know, if I've served in the military, if I'm law enforcement, and my reply has always been, nope, I'm just this awesome all by myself. You know, I don't have to be one of those jobs that carries a gun for a living to have the same skill set, because not having that skill set has led me to be a great instructor to women and to civilians, because I can take what they're saying in the gun carrying community and I can translate it into a way that makes sense to the mother of 3 and 4 and 5 kids who just wants to feel safe when she goes grocery shopping by herself.
That makes a lot of sense. And, mm-hmm. you know, women don't have the ego that men do as well.
Oh, exactly. You know? Yeah, I've been there, dealt with that a few times.
Yeah, I was a firearms instructor in the U.S. Border Patrol. Mm. You know, talking about a bunch of alpha personalities.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, everything went well. But there's times when people have a way of doing things. They've done it for a long time. They don't want to change. You have to stay up with the trend and a lot of the techniques of manipulation of a weapon, whether it's a handgun or shotgun or rifle. There's new techniques that are more efficient in movement and precision that have been developed in combat and in competition as well. And it just works better.
Yeah, exactly. So if you go to my website and you go to the search button and you type in either the Mama Bear Instinct or the Scary Place, those are two other blogs that work in conjunction with the Moms Can Be Operators 2 post, because part of what I say in the Moms Can Be Operators 2 post is that women don't understand what they're capable of if they're pushed past that point and their kids are in danger or their life is in danger. And so we call this the Mama Bear Instinct. You know, someone messes with your kids, you're going to come unhinged, because that's what parents do. You know, that's what anyone does whose loved one is in danger. But that instinct, that primal survival or defense instinct, can either be your biggest asset or your biggest liability if you're not trained. And so, you know, we always advocate getting as much training as you can. And, you know, being a mom, you know, we have a single income household. And so, like, the whole budgeting thing, like, I get it. I understand it. But even if it's just once a year that you're going to brush up on those skills and brush up on that mindset, can really make the difference between life or death later. And so you kind of have to train that mama bear instinct a little bit to work in your advantage. So if someone does mess with your kids and your instincts take over to save your kids, that you're not becoming a liability even legally or to the situation, and you're becoming more of a problem. And so that's one little tidbit I wanted to put in there as well, because we can't just rely on our instincts, because although they're good, we have a legal system that we have to abide by. You know, every state has different laws as far as self-defense and what constitutes self-defense. And we want to make sure that we're staying within those confines of the law and being good, respectable citizens with understanding, hey, these are my left and right lateral limits for my state, for my carry method, for self-defense, you know, what options I have to defend my family legally and safely, and to kind of work within those and build those knowledge of your laws into, you know, your kind of mama bear instinct as well. But on the flip side of that, you know, I think a lot of the reason that women kind of shy away from training or shy away from doing it more than once is they have to go to some place that I just call the scary place. You know, the place where I have to sit and I have to think of the worst case scenario. It's like, all right, I'm going to Walmart with my 3 kids. What is the worst thing that could happen? And I have to sit there and say, okay, well, you know, someone not paying attention and hitting my kids with the car, or someone trying to, you know, take one of my children, you know, us being stuck in an active shooter situation with no access to an exit, you know, and we have to sit there and we have to kind of sit in that gross place of all these horrific things that could happen to our family. And we have to say, okay, what's my plan? What am I going to do before we get to that point? And so it's very uncomfortable, and it can be very emotional for a female, especially a mother, because you're thinking of all these horrible, awful things that could happen to your family, but it's sitting in that moment and having that predetermined course of action before you get to that place that can really be the difference, again, between life and death, and just having that knowledge, like, okay, I'm good. Now I can leave the scary place, go on with my normal life, and be confident in the fact that I've got a plan. You know, it may not be a great plan, but it's a plan, you know, and we'll figure out the rest on the fly as we're trying to move the kids to a safe location.
You know, that's a great point. I've always known it as war gaming. You war game the different scenarios, and you try to figure out, you know, if this happens, I'll do this. If this happens, I'll do that. And it's the in the sports realm, they've been doing that. And what it does is it gives you quicker reaction.
Right.
Because what we have to do is we have to expand our mind. We have to get our mind out of the doldrums of just regular routine and push it. When I was in, as an example, when I was in law enforcement, we were taught various positions to shoot from in case we were injured and we didn't have full capacity of both arms and how to manipulate our weapons and things like that. Because what that does is it stretches your mind, says, okay, I've done this before. I know how to do it. It's in that bag of tricks should something come up where you need it. Whereas if you have never experienced that before or even thought about something tragic like somebody taking your kid, like you mentioned in your article, you're going to freeze. That moment of indecision lasts a long time in your mind, but actually it's just seconds. But still, if you already had a game plan, you would react. That's why muscle memory is so important with weapons. You draw and fire, draw and fire. And you know where your weapon is. You instinctively reach for it, and you have that smooth draw presentation and fire. So it all goes together, and wargaming is awesome, and everybody should do it to some degree.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really important, especially in the public setting, but even at home as well. I mean, my husband and I, we run through, you know, we call them sand tables or wargaming. You know, it's all kind of the same thing.
Yeah, sand tables, yeah.
Where, you know, we'll send the kids to grandma's for the night, and, you know, we'll lay in our bed and be like, okay, if someone tries to break in the front door, what is our plan? Know, how is Tim going to post up? You know, am I going to run and get the kids behind him? You know, how are we utilizing our space and our firearms where we have them in the house? You know, do we have to disengage any safes or locking mechanisms to get to those firearms? Because we have kids, you know, we keep them put away. And, you know, so what are we going to do if someone comes in the basement window? You know, what is our plan then? And we'll go and we'll do an actual physical walkthrough of the house, you know, kind of pretending, you know, like I'm going to go into my oldest son's room. I'm going to pretend to get him, take him to his little brother's room, and then, you know, kind of all kind of meet up together. But even something as simple as that, even without firearms at all, you know, you just walking through and having that conversation, it takes that fear away because you have that plan. You have that predetermined course of action.
Exactly. We're going to take a brief commercial pause here and we'll be back in a moment. Hey friends, please allow me to speak with you about something you may want to add to your regular health maintenance routine as well as your preparedness supplies. A few years ago, I came across an article in Preparedness magazine that caught my attention. My wife and I have always been health conscious and have taken various supplements over the years. However, this article introduced us to the world of essential oils. My wife began researching to find a reputable company with high quality products. What she found was a company that we have been with for about 4 years, using their products, many of them daily. The company is doTERRA, and their products are certified pure, therapeutic-grade essential oils. Essential oils come in all grades on the scale, but doTERRA oils are, in our opinion, at the top. Sure, you can go to Walmart or your local pharmacy and purchase essential oils, but not many of them are recommended for internal use. Many of our oils can be used orally, topically, and diffused for their wonderful aromatic fragrance and health benefits. Some of our favorites we use almost daily are lemon, clove, frankincense, lavender, En Garde blend, peppermint, and melaleuca, also known as tea tree oil. These oils have become our go-to remedies for managing our health throughout the year. In fact, we credit our oils for our overall good health. You can too. Just visit our website at www.oilsforlifetoday.com. Oils4lifetoday.com and explore the wonderful world of certified pure therapeutic grade essential oils for yourself. And we're back with Civil Defense Radio with our guest this week, Nyla Rhodes, the mil-spec mom.
Thank you.
Your blog post here, How to Defend Your Home from Inside, you were starting to talk about that already, you know, making a stand against intruders. That's an aspect I think a lot of people don't really think about. Sand table, wargaming, the defense of their home.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that my husband, that, you know, we always say kind of tongue in cheek, is that 100% of home invasions happen at home. So,
you know, how's that work?
Need to be prepared. really great statistic there. But, you know, doing those sand tables and those walkthroughs, you know, really do help with your mindset in that moment to understand, okay, I'm prepared for this. Maybe not 100%. I may not be confident in this plan, but I have a course of action. You know, like you said a minute ago, like that moment of indecision lasts for a very long time. And the longer it lasts, the more negative consequences there are to that decision. And so taking account, knowing your floor plan, you know, kind of taking that mental note of, you know, did my kids pick up the living room before they went to bed? Am I going to have to walk through toys to get to their bedroom if someone's trying to get in the house? You know, it's those little things that you pay attention to within your household. But also doing a walkthrough of the outside perimeter of your home, looking for, you know, weak spots. You know, are your windows high enough up off the ground that someone couldn't crawl through a window on the ground level? You know, would you hear a ladder thumping against the outside of your house and be prepared to take, you know, a course of action there? But I think one of the easiest mitigators to that is just having an alarm system and actually using it.
Yes.
We have a home alarm system. We've used ADT for years, and, you know, they've always been pretty good to us. But it's also a level of peace of mind as well, knowing that, you know, you're not going to wake up with a figure standing at the foot of your bed. You're going to hear the alarm go off right before they get to that point.
Yeah.
So having an alarm system and using it, it can also be not only a great, you know, deterrent if someone tries to break in and they set off the alarm. Hopefully one would think that they would, you know, run the other direction. You know, we live in a weird world these days where the criminals are just getting more brazen and more ballsy, for lack of a better term, in committing these crimes. And so we have to match their level of crazy with a level of training and competence. So, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, we are prepared that even if they do trip the alarm and they still rush to our bedroom or rush to our kids' rooms, that, again, we understand the laws. We understand what our legal abilities, or, you know, like I said earlier, left and right lateral limits are, and we understand how the law helps us and how it maybe is not so great depending on the state that you live in. Mm-hmm. And then how are you going to stop that bad guy without hurting anyone else? You know, I've heard a statistic, and I'm probably going to butcher this, so I apologize, but that a 9mm round can go through over 20 sheets of drywall if it doesn't penetrate any furniture or studs or, you know, anything else, if it's just drywall. And that's a lot of rooms to go through before that bullet stops.
Right.
And so you want to make sure, if you are going to, you know, take that shot in defense of your family, that you understand what's on the other side of the wall, or who's in the house next door, you know, or what's outside of your house. You know, it's not your situation is not just limited to the room that you're in. You know, there's always secondary and tertiary effects to every decision that you make. And that's part of having that proper mindset and that training, is that, you know, if you meet an intruder in the living room, you might need to take a knee and change the trajectory of your round in more of an upward position, so you're not, you know, putting anyone else's lives in harm's way. But that comes with training, and it comes with putting yourself in that uncomfortable position of being a student sometimes and saying, hey, you know, I kind of stink at this. I want to get better. What can you teach me? And then going home and going over your notes and saying, how can I apply this to how my life is? And just going from there. And so, you know, always having a plan is so underrated. You know, people think, oh, well, I've got a gun, or I've got an alarm system. It's like, yeah, that's great. But that's not just, you know, that's not your easy button. That's not some kind of a, you know, magic wand that makes everything all better. Bad guys are still going to be bad guys. And if you don't have the proper mindset and the proper training to use that tool, then again, you're just as much as in liability as the bad guy is.
Yeah.
So
you're right. Every state has its variances. You know, every individual's situation is going to be different, but Whether you're choosing to be armed or not, you still have to understand that there are bad people out there, and sometimes good people are, a lot of times, good people are victimized by them, which segues into the next. You know, we've had a lot of street demonstrations over the last few years, a lot more than previous years. And one of your articles that you wrote is Surviving an Attack in a Crowded Environment, which you kind of touched on a little bit in the being in a grocery store. But what about, I don't know if you've thought about this, and this may be a tough question, but what about being caught in one of these situations where you're coming out of a store and there's a bunch of rioting going on and stuff? You know, what do you do then?
I think it all kind of goes back to, are you by yourself or do you have your kids with you? You know, because if I'm by myself, that's going to drastically change my answer and what I do in that situation. You know, that would almost be the easiest thing, is just, I'm going to turn around and go back inside. You know, but it depends on if I have my kids with me. So, and if I'm thinking on the worst case scenario of having all three of my kids with me by myself, and I exit, you know, say Target, and there's rioting and protesting going on outside, you know, I'm going to try to go back inside the store. And I do that for a couple of reasons, is that there have been a lot of statistics out there, and I can find them for you. I don't have them up on my computer right now, but that there have been many law enforcement officers, my husband included, and guys in the military who have gotten hurt by females because they were taught not to hit females. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, you know, like all little, you know, we even teach our boys this, like, you don't hit girls, but if they hit you first, they're fair game, you know, because women can be vicious and women can be violent. And so being a female, that kind of works in my favor, is that, you know, kind of the part of that subconscious, if they were raised in any sort of a decent home environment, you know, they see a mother with children, they're probably, and I do say probably, you know, kind of speaking in generalities here, they're probably going to let me go back inside. Because I strive to be what I call that gray man of society, where I kind of blend in with everyone else. And like, kind of like I talked about the urban camouflage, being a mother with three children is fantastic urban camouflage. They don't know that I'm carrying a firearm. They don't know my level of training. They don't know my mindset. They don't know that I probably saw them. And so that leads me kind of to my next point. If I'm truly paying attention, I'm going to see they're out there before I get to the door.
Exactly.
And so if that is the case, I'm going to go inside. I'm, you know, either going to call 911 and, you know, tell them of the situation. And then I'm probably going to call my husband and say, hey, you know, I'm stuck here. You know, how close are you? Can you get here and help me get home? Can you drive around the back of the store and pick us up? You know, and my car can sit in the parking lot for a couple of days, you know, and so it kind of just depends. But part of that, having that good mindset and being situationally aware, is understanding where your exits are as well. And so when you're in a big box store, even at the mall, there's always at least one other exit, if not two.
Oh, yeah.
And so I know for Target, you know, they have their, you know, emergency exits only that are usually by their restrooms. They also have a warehouse in the back, which has, you know, at least a loading bay and a couple other exits. And so the warehouse portion of the store actually provides really good cover if I need to go, or excuse me, concealment, that if I need to go and hide for, you know, a couple minutes until things die down, until I can get to my vehicle, then I can take my kids back there and we can stay out of the way until I'm in a position that can, you know, remove my kids safely from the environment. And, you know, if the riots start coming inside, then I'm going to push that shopping cart down the road until I find someplace safe. You know, or I'm going to have a law enforcement officer take us home. So there's always lots and lots of options, and some of them are pretty unorthodox. But, you know, a lot of that is seeing it before it happens, or seeing it as it happens, because you're paying attention. Your phone's in your pocket, not distracting you. Your kids are, you know, this is kind of where it goes to parental discipline a little bit. You know, your kids aren't, you know, like cage monkeys hanging all over the car and being loud and crazy, that they're kind of toning it down and not drawing attention to themselves in that way. Because again, that's urban camouflage, you know, that you have instilled in your children that, hey, we're at a store, we're in a public place. This is not the place to be crazy and be loud and wild. That's for the park, or that's for at home. Now is where I need you guys to help me keep a lookout, you know. And it's one thing that I do with my boys, because they're old enough now, is we play a game called Head on a Swivel. And at random times when we're out together, I'll say head on a swivel, and they'll look around and they'll tell me everything that they see, because it kind of gets them ingrained in that mindset of, I need to be looking around, I need to be paying attention, you know, I need to process what I'm seeing and not just glance over it. I need to actually take that mental account of what I'm seeing and how that can help me in the future if something goes wrong.
Yeah. The reason I asked that question mainly was because it happened to me. My wife and I, we went up to Baltimore and we attended a musical performance up there, and it was a special gift for her. And we stayed the night up there in a hotel, and we walked, I think it was like 4 blocks to the theater, and everything was hunky-dory when we went in. But when we came out, Baltimore a few years ago had some heavy rioting going on and some burning going on. And when we came out, there was evidence of just that. And there were police lined up in riot gear all along the whole strip that we were walking on, and CVS store was burnt up, and you could tell it had been ransacked, and so, you know, we walked down to the hotel, and the hotel was safe. Nothing happened to the hotel. It was just a strange happening that, you know, you don't think about coming out. And I mean, if the rioting would have continued longer, we could have came out in the middle of it.
Right. Yeah. And it's just, you know, identifying issues. I mean, we always say, listen to your gut, because the gut instinct that you have, we call it the spidey sense, just because we have boys, you know, your spidey senses will tell you everything you need to know if you will listen. You know, it wants to tell you that, hey, something's off, something's weird, you need to pay attention, something's weird. You know, we also say, and I've written about this in my blog several times, is that your environment will tell you everything you need to know if you will stop and take account of it, if you will listen to it, you know, because all the data is there. You know, if we think of our brain like a computer, and we use what we call the OODA loop, orient, observe, decide, and act, is we're processing data. That's all we're doing. We're not doing anything with it necessarily until we get to that point, but we're gathering data, we're processing data to see what our data output needs to be, or what our action needs to be. But a lot of that, we can't process the data if we're not paying attention to it. And so our environment can be a huge asset to us if we will put our phones in our pockets, or give the phones to the kids and let them watch a cartoon while we're shopping, and to kind of keep them engaged in something else and quiet. And we listen to our environment. We listen to the people's conversations as we're walking down the aisle. We listen for weird sounds that shouldn't be happening in a grocery store or in a musical theater. And we're watching and we're paying attention, you know, especially when that spidey sense starts to kind of act up a little bit and say something's weird, something's off, you know, that we pay attention even more so we can have that, you know, that data processing. So when we get to that point where we have to act and, you know, it's time to physically do something, whether it's run the other way or draw your firearm or anything in between, that we're ready, that we've already had that predetermined course of action, and we're waiting for that green light to act.
Yeah. Your article about the girl who cried at the gun range and why you should too, that was really nice. I giggled a lot about that. I guess, you know, we can officially on this show, we can say, ladies, if you feel like crying, go ahead.
Absolutely. We've had so many women come through our class that cry, you know, and it's just an emotional release. You know, it's just how females most likely process data. It's how we process things that are hard, because shooting for us is not just a sport. It's the life and death of our children that hang the balance of that. And so it is a very emotional, you know, event, an emotional time, because we're thinking, I'm like, man, if I suck at this, it could get one of my kids killed. You know, that's what's going through our minds out there. And so it is a very emotional time. And after a while, after, you know, a year or two of training, we kind of can deaden those emotions a little bit during that training moment. But still, you know, if we're presented with something that's very stressful or very difficult for us to get through, or we're having a hard time, you know, I think I said in that specific blog post about the plate rack. And that's one thing that our instructor had said, is that the plate rack is the equalizer. And I'm like, I'm good. I got this. You know, I've been shooting this for a long time. And I totally sucked. And it was awful.
You know,
but that was like
you.
The last day of a really intense and very challenging 3-day course. And so like my mind wasn't where it normally is. My body wasn't where it normally is. Every part of me was sore. And it was just, it was hard. And there's no reason that I can't take five and go, you know, get some emotions out, pull myself together and strengthen my resolve to, you know, dominate the play racket another time.
Yeah. And that brass is hot, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I've got many a scar from hot brass.
Oh, yeah. I've had them go down my shirt as well. So don't feel bad.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that happens. And
oh, it does.
You know, yeah. Shooting next to somebody, their brass is flying into your shirt and yours is flying into somebody else's. So yeah. It all equals out.
It's a nice chain reaction of events there.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. Before we end here, Nyla, can you tell the audience, what is the meaning of your handle here, Mil-Spec Mom?
Mil-Spec Mom kind of came from, I guess, you know, the term Mil-Spec is military specification, you know, that something is up to military standards. And so that was when I was first starting out with this blog and with this idea of really just putting information out there, you know, and kind of educating people that survival and preparedness and self-defense, it doesn't have to be real scary, you know, but like the military has got something down, you know, like they do a lot of things well. They do a lot of things terrible, but they do a lot of things really well, you know, at the same time. And so if I can be a mom up to military specifications, then, you know, as long as I'm striving for something better than myself and striving to be better and utilizing what's already out there and is being done well, then I think I'm in a pretty good spot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So it's a cool name too.
Thank you. Yeah, we have a good time. It's been a great journey trying to figure out what content is relevant to people. You know, we do talk a lot about survival and about preparedness as well, which is something very important to us, you know, the not having that dependence on the government. And, you know, a lot of what we're realizing, especially since I started this, you know, my master's in emergency disaster management, is that it's not a lack of want to being prepared. It's not that people think it's too hard. It's not that people don't have the money normally. You know, it's not really that people just don't want to take the time. It's just that the generations, like my generation and those younger than me, are being ingrained somewhere. And I, you know, I can give you my ideas, but that might be a little too politically charged for this particular day.
Yeah, I try to keep it apolitical.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. They're being ingrained that the government is going to take care of them and fix all their problems. And that's not the case. And so
you're right, it's not.
Yeah, a lot of the issue, a lot of the pushback, not even really pushback, a lot of like the just lackadaisical aspect towards survival and preparedness just comes from people who think that the government is going to come in and fix everything. And you know, I keep asking, like, hey, you know about Katrina? Like, did you watch Katrina? Like, did you watch any news about Katrina at all? What was happening? Like
Hurricane Sandy?
Yeah, exactly. Hurricane Sandy.
Harvey? You
know, yeah.
Michael?
Yep. Any of them. I mean, yeah. Just pick something out of a hat and you watch and you tell me how well the government did fixing that, because some things are just too big for the government to fix all at once.
Yeah.
Nor is that their job. You know,
right,
the federal
right.
government's job to fix things.
It's a local government's job to make sure that you're prepared. And that's where the local politicians and the emergency manager and the EMS system comes to play. But that's not a stool that is easily standing by itself. It needs a third leg. It needs the citizenry.
Yeah. And that was one thing that I just finished up an internship with the town that we just moved from in their emergency management department. And that was very eye-opening and very educational in a lot of different ways. But one thing that the town manager allowed me to do was kind of set up this program that I had written a paper about years ago in one of my emergency management classes with this education program, what I call the Community Resiliency Education Program, so CREP. And how I structured it was that once a month we would have a 1-hour session, you know, in the evening, and we would sit and we would talk about a certain, you know, survival disaster situation, you know, aspect every month. And so the first month we did winter weather survival tips. So what to have in your car, you know, during the winter months, not being a turd on the road, making sure you're giving plenty of time between, you know, you and the car in front of you, especially if it's slick. The second month, we talked about FEMA's 72-hour bug out bag or, you know, survival pack that they have on their website there.
Right.
You know, we talked about financially preparing for a disaster. You know, what does that look like as far as, you know, your personal finances go? What kind of debt you have? You know, how to get that paid off so it's not just hanging out there and you can utilize more cash to purchase, you know, survival or preparedness goods. We talked about seasons of extreme drought, how to help your community conserve water, and several other, you know, different topics there. But it was really interesting to see in that some sessions we had a lot of turnout. We did a House of Worship Protection seminar because the Department of Homeland Security has, you know, a lot of information out there and education things out there about that, you know, and, you know, the 72-hour FEMA session, we didn't have a real good turnout, you know, because I think it goes back to that lackadaisical aspect. If something happens, someone else is going to fix their problem for them.
Well, that's been the message from government for a long time, for decades. It's unfortunate. And it's just wrong. I take it back to the mutually assured destruction nuclear policy that we had morphed into our emergency preparedness. And so we lost our civil defense and we gained emergency management, but emergency management focuses on continuity of government and getting, you know, making sure that that government operates and responds. Well, there's a lot of things that
more to it than that.
Exactly. There's been a lot of failure there. And so that's what one of the things that inspired me to bring back a new civil defense structure for America.
No, I think that's a great aspect because, I mean, a lot of people, you know, I just learned about the whole civil defense program from, you know, yesteryear. I mean, within the last 6 months through classes, that's not something that's really taught anymore about what that structure is and how it was utilized and how effective it can be if it was done properly. But that was also my part of my goal behind that community resiliency education program that I'm hoping to take in the future, you know, to other municipalities, because I mean, all you're paying is for the person speaking. Everything else is really relatively, you know, low cost or free. And so they're not having to work this program into budgets. You know, you have a little marketing perhaps, but that's really all you're spending money on. But you get that bottom up approach. If we can make households more resilient and the government is doing what they do from the top tier and we can work on the bottom tier, we can meet in the middle. You know, I think that's a great structure just to making, you know, the whole community just much more resilient to disasters, because the government is going to work on what the government thinks is important, which is the government, and getting the whole community and the town government back in operation so that it can still run like a normal town and normal government. But there's all these other little people, you know, all of us households and these, you know, neighborhoods and communities that need help too. But, you know, the top tier government isn't really in a position to help us the way that we need it. A lot of it has to be done on our own.
Well, Hurricane Harvey, when it hit Houston, demonstrated that government can't do it and that it has to be the people. The people have to get up and do it. And they did. Mm-hmm. Texans, I lived in Texas for a long time, and I consider that my adopted home. It's imperative that we are able to be our own first responders and second responders and third responders.
Right.
Because government can be overwhelmed so easily and they won't be there to help. Mm-hmm. And even the former administrator for FEMA has said that. If you're waiting on government to come and help you, that's a bad choice. So, you know, some paraphrased, it's something that we really need to do. We need to fix this. It's unfortunate that that government itself is in the way of this as well.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I don't think a lot of normal folks out there understand how political disasters are anymore. As they have turned into this hugely political event that, you know, if done correctly politically, which can also be very incorrectly for the community, directly right. affects voters and how they vote in the next election. And so a lot of these people are kind of in it for themselves, in, you know, for lack of a better term, to get those reelection votes. And so they're spending money and resources in areas that they think is going to get them publicity, but not where it's actually needed.
You're right.
Everything is just so political anymore. It's unfortunate. Understandable, you know, on a level as a voter, you know, if something happened in my county and, you know, my state governor, you know, said, screw you guys, you're fine, just, you know, put some boots on and clean it up. Yeah, I probably wouldn't vote for him next election season, you know, because he didn't empathize with what we were going through. But, you know, if you can find that leader that can say, yeah, you know, that sucks. You know, I don't think this is federal disaster worthy, but let's see what we can do on a state level to help you and get you guys back up and going, you know.
Right.
He would actually be helpful to the community that it's in without getting, you know, super political and get the federal government involved.
Yeah, well, it goes down to the local level. Yep. It's a city and county governments that have to be responsive to their citizens.
Right.
And that's where civil defense is, where I'm focusing on and where it should be implemented at. Because that's where you're helping your community. You're not worried about some governor supporting you. You're worried about your local city council, your county supervisors, things like that, that have the ability to help by passing resolutions that both inform the population of the threats that we have,
right,
some serious threats, and the need for a community-based civil defense organization.
Right.
And so if you have any last-minute suggestions or comments, go ahead.
I guess my last point would be to all the mamas, and I mean even the women out there too, that when you're looking into survival and preparedness, start small. It's an extra box of rice stored in a pantry. It's, you know, an extra case of water, you know, an extra bulk can of green beans. You know, you don't have to be all crazy right away. Just start small, but start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would also say that when you're looking for a good firearms instructor, be sure to vet your instructors properly. There's a lot of amazing instructors out there, and there are a lot of very dangerous instructors out there as well. There is a blog post on my blog called How to Find a Good Firearms Instructor, which is just questions to ask on making sure you get someone who knows what they're talking about, who speaks to you and to what you want to learn and how you learn, but that can also keep you safe and keep you from learning things that, you know, are detrimental to the safety of your family. So just go check that out before you guys take any classes. If you're new to the instructor world, just to make sure that you're getting someone that's high quality and that is safe, that didn't just, and I apologize, this might be a little offensive to some, but just do their 4 years in the military as a cook and get out and then think they're God's gift to the NRA. You know, like there's got to be more education and experience back there to be a good tactician. So,
yeah. And your website is?
MilSpecMom.com.
Okay. That's MilSpecMom.com.
Yep.
The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem of resiliency. We are looking for volunteers throughout the nation to pick up the mantle of civil defense for their communities. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page of our website at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on our Facebook page at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio, where we post information on a regular basis. I wish to thank Nyla again for being on the show. She's got a cool name, MilSpec Mom. And thank you, our listeners. I really appreciate you being on our show this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.